This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 92. Today, CJ and I are going to talk to Stuart Kwan about some of the new changes with identity in Azure and App Model V2 and all sorts of good stuff around that for developers. Recorded live August 19th, 2015.
Welcome to the Microsoft Cloud Show, the only place to stay up to date on everything going on in the Microsoft Cloud world, including Windows Azure, Office 365, SharePoint, Exchange, Link, and related technologies. Just the information, no marketing, no BS. I'm Andrew Connell.
And I'm Chris Johnson.
And we're just two dudes telling you how we see it.
Hey, CJ, how's it going today?
Good morning, mate. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. How things been going for you lately?
Not too bad. It's nice weather up here in Seattle, and I'm at SP TechCon this week. We're heading down there later on this morning. So catching up with a whole bunch of nerdy devs in the Office 365 space later on today.
We mean SP Tech Fest?
Sorry, SP Tech Fest. Yes, you're right. My bad.
But don't say SP TechCon because I'm supposed to be there in Boston next week, and I'm in Florida right now. So if you said it this week, I've missed a few sessions I'm supposed to deliver.
Jump on that plane quickly, man.
No, man, I'm gonna have to phone that one in.
There's a bunch of people in town for that. Obviously, a bunch of SharePoint folks in town. So I'm hoping to catch up with a bunch of the crew later on this afternoon and get nerdy.
Awesome. Very cool.
How about you?
I'm finally getting my voice back and off all the meds and stuff I've been on for the last 2-3 weeks. So it feels like I'm actually getting back to normal.
You sound much better.
As long as somebody doesn't make me laugh, like you were making me laugh yesterday, and then I get into another coughing fit. So,
hey, well, I'll try not to be quite as funny today.
Yeah. I had one guy actually ping me on Twitter and said that the Microsoft Cloud Show started to sound like the TB show. So.
Hopefully it doesn't catch over the tubes. So
No, just a bit of a... So whoever you were, that was a bit of a jackass comment, but anyway.
Hey, before we get into the meat and potatoes of the show today, I've just got one quick thing I read last night that I think we should call out. Hmm. It's a little news item. It's a blog post by Mark Rusinovich. It's called Containers, Docker, Windows, and Trends. And if anybody's new to containerization or wants a good synopsis of... What containerization is all about and virtualization and what Microsoft's up to and what Docker's up to and the partnership there and all that sort of stuff. We'll link off to that in the show notes. It's up on the Microsoft Azure blog. It's called Containers, Docker, Windows, and Trends. And it's really good. It's quite a long post, but it's a really nice intro to what containerization is, kind of how it works, how it differs from traditional virtual machine style virtualization and, you know, some of the benefits and drawbacks of different approaches and things like that. So it's a pretty sweet post.
Yeah, pretty cool. Yeah, this past week, I have been working on a bunch of stuff for to make Office add-in development easier for people who are not on Visual Studio. So I've been building something called a Yeoman generator so that you can just go to the command line and type in Yo Office add-in, ask you a few questions. And essentially, it's going to scaffold up a project with... either using just plain old HTML, CSS, JavaScript, or with Angular, either a mail, task pane, or a content add-in. It's pretty slick. It's pretty nice. And then working on some other stuff to make life a little bit easier. So really trying to make Office add-ins a better story for people that are not on Windows. And actually spent about an hour or so with some guys with Scott Hillier over at IT Unity yesterday for a webinar talking about Office add-ins and just the state of Office add-ins and where we are and stuff like that. So that was on they have a show that they do, I think it's once every 2 or 3 weeks called the Dev Pulse. So
nice.
Put a link to that. You can go back and watch a video of that if people want to later.
Whenever you talk about Yeoman, it always makes me think about Jesse out of Breaking Bad.
I get the exact same thing. Office add-ins, bitch.
Office add-ins, yo. Science, yo. Anyway.
All right. Well, hey, let's jump into the whole reason we want to do this episode today. So we've got a special guest with us, Stuart Kwan. He's a principal program manager for the Azure AD team. Stuart's worked with identity and security related technologies since joining Microsoft back in 1996 and has served as a GPM and product unit manager of AD, a director of program management for identity and access technology, and a GPM for federated identity technologies, including ADFS, Windows Identity Foundation, and the ADAL library. Prior to starting full-time, Stuart interned with Microsoft and was a key contributor to the Active Directory Services Interface, ADSI project. Stuart graduated from the University of Waterloo in Waterloo, Ontario, with a Bachelor's of Applied Science in Computer Engineering. He lives in Redmond with his two sons and his wife. And in his spare time, he enjoys watching football, the American kind. Kicking up pretty soon here. and is an avid follower of the automotive and aerospace industries. Man, it sounds like right up the same kind of interest that I have. I'm a SpaceX guy. I got a big car guy. I got my vanity plate for my Tesla last week, so I'm all pumped up.
You're in the right place. Yeah.
Welcome, Stuart. How are you doing today?
I'm doing very well, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Hey, so the reason we wanted to get you on the show is last week, actually, when we were getting ready to record our show, the one that went live, I guess, while we're the day before we're recording this one, we noticed the blog post that Alex Simmons posted and that you chimed in on, which had some really great news around identity, app model, and a registration portal around apps. And so I guess before we dive into the whole kind of going back and forth and discussing it, why don't you tell us a little bit about what the great news is to share for developers out there in the Azure space and I guess in, by extension, the Office 365 space.
Absolutely. Microsoft has historically had two different big, like mega scale, cloud scale identity systems. There's the one called Microsoft Account, which used to be known as Live ID. And even before that was Microsoft Passport. And of course, Azure Active Directory. And one is used for consumer identities when you're logging into your stuff, your OneDrive, your Outlook.com. And the other one is used when you're logging into Office 365 or when you're logging into Microsoft Azure or Microsoft Dynamics, when you're doing business or school-related stuff, organizational stuff. So we've had these two identity systems. And if you're a developer and you wanted to be able to sign people in from both sides of the court here, then you had trouble because you had to integrate separately with each of these different stacks. So the announcement that we made last week was about taking these two systems and we're bringing them together so that you can literally have one button on your app to sign in Microsoft users, be they consumer users or work or school users. And you can get those users signed in. They have a lovely experience when they do that sign in. Previously, if you wanted to support both these systems, you had to have two buttons on your app, literally. Like if you were building a web application, one button to sign a user in with their work account, which was always difficult for us to explain. Developers always wanted to put a button on the application that said, log in with your Office 365 account, which wasn't really necessarily true. It might, the person who's signing in with Azure Active Directory might not have Office 365. They might have something else. They might be using Azure Active Directory for other reasons. But users don't know what Azure Active Directory is. They don't know what that button is. So the nearest thing that most people would put was Office 365. And then you could have your Microsoft account button for signing in if you're using your personal identity. And this is just it, right up front, end users, people have this problem of having to make this choice. Not only that, developers having to integrate with these two different stacks. So recognizing this problem, we're bringing the systems together so that you can have one button, sign users in from either of these two big audiences. And the user has a lovely experience when they do that because they just have to enter their username. And we figure out under the covers, is that a personal account? Is that a work account? Is it both? Have the user pick which one, if it's both, that they want to use to sign in. And from the developer standpoint, they just had to send one request off. They receive a response. They can tell from looking at the response where the user came from, and they can go forward. And that's just a big simplification in and of itself. A couple of other things that we're doing as we're bringing these systems together, we've made some changes to the way we support OAuth and OpenID Connect to be more conformant with what other people are doing in industry. And that's based on feedback that we've gotten around the OAuth and OpenID Connect implementations that we have for Azure Active Directory. We've simplified the process, as you mentioned, of just registering your application. In order to have your application use either of these sign-in systems, it has to be known to the sign-in system, so you need to register it. In particular, with Azure Active Directory, to do that in the past is required that you go and you get an Azure subscription and that you dig your way into the Azure management portal and find the spot where you register your application. And that was a little bit too onerous for someone who just wanted to say, hey, I have my app. I want Azure AD people to be able to sign into it. So we have this purpose-built portal now, very streamlined to help you get yourself registered and going. And all of this is actually part of a bigger effort that we have going on here at Microsoft to take the APIs that we have. Like if you think of Outlook.com. Previously, there was Outlook if you were coming in as a consumer user, and there was a set of APIs for the consumer Outlook.com, and then there was a set of APIs for the business Outlook.com that was associated with Office 365. And part of the bigger mission that we have here is to bring those APIs together so that there's only one API for accessing Outlook.com, and it doesn't matter if the user's a consumer user or if the user's a work user. All the APIs are the same. So we bring the identity systems together. There's just one way you need to sign users in, and then there's one API you can call. And we'll do that across all of at least the Office properties with the with respect to the APIs to just really simplify the situation. And then if you're familiar with the Office 365 unified API, we're also trying to bring all of the Office APIs behind a single REST endpoint. So literally, there'll just be one REST endpoint to get at all the different GUI goodness of Office 365, and they'll have one OAuth, OpenID Connect-based mechanism to sign into it, just to make it a lot simpler to build applications in this environment.
Yeah, that's a whole bunch of great stuff that's going on here. I know that your blog post that we'll link to in the show notes, we linked to it last week, but we'll link to it again this week. It does talk a lot, have a bunch of screenshots and kind of walk through exactly what's going on so people don't have to go. They can see what's going on with this new portal that you're talking about and some examples of some of the requests you would make to get access tokens with some of the new API without having to go kick the tires and try stuff out. I guess just before we kind of start diving into it, I mean, where are you guys in this process today? Like, what can people play with today? What's available for them to see and stuff like that?
So today what you can do is you can go to that new registration portal, apps.dev.microsoft.com. You can register your application, and then you can do basically two things. You can build your application, be it a web app or a mobile app or a PC app, and you can sign users into your app with the registration that you've created, and they can come from Microsoft, the users can come from Microsoft account, they can come from Azure AD. You can also call the Outlook API right now, as of our recording. More Office APIs will get lit up in the near future, but right now you can call the Outlook API. What you can't do is you can't register an API of your own and call your own API. One actually nice thing about the new application model that we're introducing here to simplify things is it used to be let's say you had a web API and you had a mobile app like an iOS app or an Android app or a Windows app, and you were calling that web API. In the V1 app model with Azure AD, you had to register two separate applications for that. So you would register your web API, and then you'd also register your mobile application, and then you would create relationships between those. One of the simplifications in the V2 app model is if you really just logically have one app, your mobile app's calling your API, and it's really just logically one app, you only have to make one registration now. And as you go through our app portal, we actually walk you through the activity of adding platforms, if you will. So when you first register your app, you get an application ID, and then you can add the web API part of your application, and then you can add the mobile part of your application. But it's all just one registration. And that means that your mobile app can call your web API. But that's it. If you had a second web API that was a distinctly different security realm, if you will, you can't register that and then have their first application call your second application. We don't have that support yet. That's something that we're working on. And the other thing that's somewhat ironic here, if someone outside of Microsoft wants to build an application that uses the sign-in model, you can go ahead and you can play with that now with this preview. But people who build applications at Microsoft, so the Office team and others, aren't actually able to use this for sign-in yet because there's more complexity that we have to bring together in the merger of the two systems before we can do that. We call those first-party applications. First-party applications are treated by the identity systems a little bit differently than applications registered by everyone else. So right now what you can do is you can register your app, you can sign into your app, you can call the Outlook API. Over time, more APIs will show up, and over time we'll also add the ability for you to register your own APIs or for you to call other APIs that are registered by other people outside of Microsoft.
Oh my God. That was okay. So you just here it goes. Now we got a bucket of information, a bucket of questions we can start picking into. I just jotted down a bunch of questions. I don't know about you, CJ.
Yeah, so I got one to kick things off. I think so historically, how did the world end up in this situation where we had like two identity systems to begin with, right? Because it feels to me like I think I know a little bit of the backstory about how we ended up with, people's work IDs or Azure AD and what was Live ID and now, you know, Microsoft ID. And, it, you know, many years ago, they sort of, they started from one code base, as I understand it, and diverged. And is this a true coming together of the two systems, or would you categorize this more in the, we're just taking the complexity of two systems away to developers by sort of putting a whole bunch of things in front of two systems to bring them back together logically from a user and a developer's point of view?
So there is quite a history behind these two systems and why there are two systems and why they're coming together as one. I would characterize this as it is, in the long term, the bringing of two systems together into one. There is a, there's a funny story, and I don't know, other people out there who've built big systems before might recognize this pattern, but we had this joke, I remember a long time ago when I worked on Active Directory, we had two different kinds of groups in NT4, in the domain system, and in Active Directory. There were local groups and global groups, and there were different rules about, you used local groups in one situation, global groups in another situation. So in Active Directory, starting with Windows 2000, we thought, okay, we're going to, this is too hard. Why do there need to be two different kinds of groups? Let's make it just be one kind of group. So in our earnestness to converge the two group types into one, we created a third group type, universal groups, right? And then it's like you're scratching your head about how is this better? three things instead of two. But as it turns out, the way that we're bringing these two systems together is, as you were mentioned, as you alluded to earlier, is to create a third thing, which is actually a switcher between the two systems to begin. So there's a whole new set of front ends, if you will, that are processing these new requests for AppModel V2 on the V2 endpoint. And as those requests come in, the switcher mainly figures out, okay, do I send this request to the Microsoft account system to be fulfilled, or do I send it to Azure Active Directory to be fulfilled? Now, that front end we'd like to talk about here is going to get thicker and thicker and thicker until it takes over the front end capacities of both systems. And then there'll be just a logical multi-tier system where there's a front end that brings in requests and then back ends where we're actually storing all the users and their passwords and their data. And whether or not the back ends also become merged together over time is an interesting question that our engineering team is going through. But we do intend to bring the front ends together so that eventually this becomes one system. Now, there was actually a time, if we go back several years before the birth of Office 365, where we were actually building everything in one cloud identity system, but there were some decisions made because the company at the time was working on Windows 8. The company at the time was working on birthing of Office 365, and we felt that we needed the agility in both of those systems to be able to make decisions and proceed with adding functionality independently. So we created the two systems. What was then Live ID continued on to be Microsoft account and was mainly serving the Windows consumers ecosystem. And then Office 365 was born, and underneath Office 365, Azure Active Directory was born. And it was actually the very first incarnation of that was a combination of Active Directory code and a fork, if you will, of the what was then the Live ID code. In fact, if you've ever heard, there's words that you'll hear inside Microsoft. There was a thing called Org ID, which was organizational accounts, but it was built on Live ID, so it was called Org ID. But that's actually years ago, sort of ancient history. There were two systems, and this is the bringing together of the two systems back into one, both for the improved end user experience, for the improved developer experience, but also for engineering efficacy on our side, so that as we're maintaining these big identity systems, we can share a lot of platform deployment and other technologies. We can share a lot of implementations of various protocols. We can share a lot of the real-time security protection and anomalous sign-in detection logic that was born in both of these systems. We can bring those things together, and we can serve, you know, more efficiently both of the audiences with the one system.
Yeah, I think that, you know, that makes a whole ton of sense from just the way the world's changed over the last few years as well. You know, it used to be that you used to have your personal life and your work life, and they were pretty separate, and apps were either work apps or personal apps, right? And with all the explosion in mobile apps, for example, and, you know, just take Wunderlist, for example, for list making, right? You typically don't just have an app that you just use for work and just use for home. You want to be able to sign in and get your personal lists as well as your work to-do lists and things. So from an identity perspective, those lines are sort of getting fuzzier and grayer and less well-defined as well. So I think it makes sense from an identity point of view for sure, bringing those two worlds together.
It greatly simplifies too your day-to-day life. I mean, you want to have just your one identity, whether that be your personal identity or your work identity. I want to be able just to use an account that I'm used to using all the time to get into my stuff.
Yeah, often we find that people, they still want to have a distinction, if you will, between their work identity and their personal identity. So that, especially when you're sending a piece of mail, you want to know, all right, which context are you sending it in? But despite the fact that you might have these two different contexts that you work in, you want to be able to not have to make big jarring context switches between them inside of the app, right? You want the app to be able to serve both of your identities very seamlessly while still knowing, okay, am I sending this mail to my wife as my work identity or my personal identity? You want to keep those things straight, but you definitely want to make it as easy as possible to get into the application. Working on identity, I've worked on identity for quite a while now. It's kind of a funny thing. Nobody wakes up in the morning and says, I'm really looking forward to logging in today. You know, it's the thing that it's the thing that is between the user and what they actually want to do. And so trying to make that as easy as possible while still maintaining security and maintaining, you know, the assurances that application developers want about who the user is and stuff like that is a real challenge. But we're best in the identity team when you don't know we're around, right? Like it just becomes something that's a very natural thing as you're using an application and not a stumbling block in any way, both when you're building an app or using an app.
So the convergence of personal and work, will this help AC's problem of yeah, this is probably not new to you as well. AC's got this problem where he signed up for an org ID or a work ID using his personal vanity domain many years ago, which also happens to be a live ID, if I understand it correctly. And now he's got all sorts of shenanigans going on about being at what he can sign into and how many things he can have open in one particular browser and then switching between the two and all that. Would you think that, you know, from just a pure end user point of view, people in that situation who have got a work and a personal email address that also happens to be their identity in both of those places, be able to pick between the two when they go sign in?
It's definitely part of this project to help that situation, both from the standpoint of, well, should people end up in that situation or not? Like, should we continue to encourage that there be, you have a user that has the same username and it's in both systems. So, and there's a bunch of thinking that's going on right now about what's the right way to resolve that. But certainly, as you were mentioning earlier, the idea of most applications should be multi-user aware, and you should be able to sign in with multiple accounts into the application at once, and you should be able to sign in with two accounts of the same name from the different systems at the same time, is definitely something that we are working on making happen across the applications at Microsoft. And the identity system itself natively supports this idea. Otherwise, what you find if you're an engineer working on identity at Microsoft, you have as many browsers installed on your on your desktop as you can, so that you can be logged in with it and its in private equivalent or incognito equivalent at the same time. Yeah. To have as many different accounts going and tests going at once, and it's more and more if we can make the applications just be aware of this, and then they'll become less and less important to have to do that sort of thing. You know, for development, it's one thing. In an ordinary person's everyday life, to have multiple browsers to do that is just a bad thing. So,
hey, it might have also happened to inadvertently help all those helpless souls that signed into Ashley Madison with their work email addresses recently, and who have now been exposed to the world in a data dump of 7 gigabytes yesterday or something.
Oh my goodness. Imagine all those poor people. Well, I shouldn't say poor people. They kind of brought it on themselves, but just imagine all the fear that's tearing through so many people's lives right now. Like, I hope my wife or my husband has no idea what this news is.
Now there's an identity problem for sure.
It's funny that you bring this particular topic up. Not just the general topic. But one of the things that is happening on the internet is the bad guys out there, quote unquote, are going after various sites and stealing their user databases and revealing them on the web, if only to steal the user accounts because of the habit that many people have to use their email address as their username at any given site on the web, and then the same password at many, many different sites. So if you can breach one small sort of not well protected site and take its username and password list, often you can use that. You can parlay that into attacking other bigger sites because of the, you know, this tendency that people have. And it's difficult to take, you know, any given developer is building a site like this and has their own sign-in system. It's hard to hold them at fault for this because the attacks are getting more and more sophisticated and the attackers are getting more and more sophisticated. And that's why we think that we're going to see this trend further in the industry for people to, or for people who are building these sites to support sign-in using some other identity system like the one we build, like Azure Active Directory or Microsoft account, because our systems, our systems are, I'll dare say, better protected because we have many domain experts, literally hundreds of people who spend their entire days thinking and breathing and doing nothing but working on identity and security for the cloud. And we are investigating the various attacks as they evolve. We're under attack every single day. So just for our own survival, we have to develop mechanisms to protect our systems, to protect our users. Someone once told me that, you work on identity at Microsoft. I get it. You're the people that we pay to use crypto properly, right? Like, because there are many people who don't know how to use crypto, you know, it just because it's a somewhat esoteric thing. So we know how to hash and encrypt secrets and store them appropriately and stuff like that. And it's difficult if you're just an average developer working on an application out there to have that, the kind of domain expertise, to have the kind of time to spend that we do to work on protecting the systems, to use machine learning algorithms to detect anomalies in sign-in traffic, to have all of the different sign-in traffic that we have, literally billions of authentications a day. There's good traffic in there and there's bad traffic, and we're finding the bad traffic, finding the patterns. We have, in the digital crimes unit, we have people who are cracking botnets. When they crack botnets, they figure out the IP addresses of the botnets. They share the IP addresses with us. We do not allow sign-ins to come from those IP addresses. That's not something that your average developer can do if they're putting a sign-in system into their website, right? So just to get out of that, or not to get out of that business instantly, no one's going to walk away from their user database right now, but to gradually support more sign-ins from the likes of Microsoft or Google or Facebook is, I think, a good move from a security standpoint, because we, the big sites on the web, will be paying more attention and putting more investment into protecting those users.
You know, it's funny you say that because it's a great conversation to have with a developer when they talk about building a new application and they're going through the decision process of, do I stand up my own user database? Are they asking, I get the questions from some developers like, what would you use to store your own database and how would you encrypt your passwords? I'm like, I wouldn't. And they explain the same kind of thing that you went through. And it's like, I'd like to use, personally, because I prefer Azure, but I'd like to put my entire user database inside of Azure AD and let it handle that way. And they're like, yeah, but then you don't own your database, and then they own it, and then they can do something with it, or they can get hacked. I'm like, they got a lot more on the line than I have or that you have. I wish I had a business that was as valuable and had that much on the line as these guys do. I don't have the revenues. You guys have the budgets and you have the resources to be able to dedicate to protect these things. And it's a much bigger deal if Azure AD gets hacked than it is if some .com site's going to go get hacked, because it's not just... it's not just Azure AD. I mean, that's Microsoft. That's all Microsoft as a company. That's all the companies that rely on Azure AD. That's 365, tens of millions, hundreds of millions of people. So it's a no-brainer to me. And when, it's funny watching that realization. They kind of come full circle on it. They're like, yeah, you're right. It really doesn't make sense for me to do this stuff. It really makes sense for me to outsource this to someone else that you do trust. Or I've had some people say, I don't know if I trust Azure AD or not yet. I just don't have the familiarity with it. It's like, just look who else is trusting it and you can have that blind faith. Microsoft as a whole, as a company, has trust in Azure AD. So you can have that kind of that safety net. It's funny, we bring up the whole hacking and Ashley Madison thing. I've got Twitter running and I swear my news feed, every third or fourth item that's coming up, the tweet that's coming up has Ashley Madison in the name. Some of these things, I swear, are the people who are completely ignorant of what this Ashley Madison site is. Some people that are doing these tweets really should think about how they're phrasing it, because they're talking about the Ashley Madison dump. And if they thought that this was an actual individual, they're like, yeah, that's the public Ashley Madison dump. Like, that's just, Twitter's gone dirty. But anyway.
I tell you what, like, as a developer, you know, that conversation of like, should I use this or not, seems like a very straightforward proposition to me. Would I rather A, spend a whole bunch of time and effort trying to be an expert in this space, or B, give that problem to somebody else to figure out and spend the rest of my time actually building features of my app,
yep,
versus having to try and be good at identity?
Yeah.
So from an end user's point of view, it seems like a complete and utter no-brainer, right? I love it when sites give me the option of signing in with one of the sort of three central identities that I have on the net, because it means I don't have to have another username and a password and then worry about, oh, well, now I've got my three tiers of passwords and all that sort of stuff, so that this is an untrusted site, so I'm going to use some other thing I got to make up, or, you know, use one of my sort of three central identities I use.
Yeah. So let me, a couple of questions for you then. I guess we talked a little bit here about the convergence, in a sense, of taking the Microsoft accounts or the MSAs, live IDs, whatever somebody wants to call them today. We go by all those names. And then the other identity system, which is all based on Azure AD, goes by Work ID, Org ID, Office 365 ID. People know them as those, but it's really Microsoft account is number one, and number two is Azure AD, no priority there. What are we looking at in terms of like a time frame for this convergence of these two to be able to come together, where people will, are we in a work in progress today, or would you say that this front end kind of decision is done and baked in preview or going to GA, or where would you say we are today, Stuart?
It's definitely a work in progress, but not an experiment. I mean, this is a committed path for us. This is the way we're going to evolve our system. There's a set of things that we still need to resolve before we can call it done from this from the outside developer standpoint. Remember, I talked about the distinction between everyone else building applications and then Microsoft building applications and using the system. We're proceeding on both fronts, but most people, of course, will care about, I'm not a Microsoft developer. I'm building my application. When can I actually use this? We're talking months. It's not like we're weeks away from finishing this thing. We need to go light up the ability to call other APIs, and we need to bring all of the functionality back. Basically, all of the scenarios that are supported by Microsoft account and Azure AD today, we need to make all of those come to life in this system, and then probably have a little bit more time to get feedback before we call it GA. And of course, the big difference with GA nowadays is GA is the time when we will no longer make breaking changes without giving long notice, without giving 12 months notice, right? But right now, the system's very much preview. We're going to be changing things and breaking things occasionally as we get feedback of people telling us, no, you need to think hard about this, you need to think hard about that. For example, just recently we started rerunning the OpenID Connect conformance suite on it, and we found a couple of places where we need to make some changes to be right in compliance with the industry standard conformance test suite. So that could break some people, but it probably won't break some people. Well, on our on the articles that we've posted on the developer guide on how to use the site, we'll be keeping track there about these different things. But what people should be doing right now is give it a try and give us any feedback you have on the changes that we've made to the application model, the changes that we've made in the protocol, the libraries, the registration system, and we'll continue to evolve it. But just keep watching the Active Directory team blog. That's where we make most of our announcements on, okay, this is now ready for, this is now ready to try out, or eventually this is now ready for production. But we're pretty much months away. It's going to be a long activity to bring both of these two systems together. It's a tricky business, as it turns out, to bring these two systems that are doing billions of authentications a day together into one system, but also a very fun engineering challenge and a very fun product design challenge.
Cool. So a couple of questions that comes from that. So you say where we are in the current state of this, and we're looking at like months away and stuff. When you say that, one of the challenges too, or one of the things that needs to be done is lighting up some of the other endpoints. Like we talked about how today the Outlook or the Exchange Online API, so outlook.office365.com, which is calendar, contacts, mail. But we also mentioned things like the unified API, and then there's a bunch of other ones that are out there as well, like OneDrive and some other ones. When you say light those up, is that something that is of the responsibility? Like as a developer, who should I be looking to for that? Should I be watching OneDrive to say, now we support this? Or should I be looking at you guys on the Azure AD side that you saying you guys support that? Whose responsibility is to light up those different endpoints?
It's a joint responsibility, but the I'd say the larger body of the work comes from the application itself. So if it's OneDrive, it's the OneDrive team that needs to do more of the work per se than the identity system team. And they are working OneDrive, OneNote, and the unified API itself, that they all need to be enabled for accepting the tokens that come from the new endpoint from the new app model. And that activity is underway right now.
Okay. Another question too. So as a developer, you mentioned that developers were going to have the ability at someone like me could build my own API and I could essentially publish it, put it in Azure AD. I believe I can do that today, but it's a little tricky with having to put the manifest together and stuff and having a special registration. But defining my own permission scopes and defining my own API and then writing my API, my endpoint that knows how to expect certain access tokens and validate them and stuff based on the different tokens, that's something that's coming also, you're saying, to this new model. And what kind of a time frame are we looking at for that for developers? Is that kind of way off thing, or is that something that we could start to play with maybe, or start to see some news about that somewhat soon?
That is one of the things we're working on right now. And unfortunately, just given the amount of work that needs to be done here, it's also sort of months away. Like, here, where are we here? We're almost September, right? It's August. I'd expect to see some more significant news before the end of the calendar year. But I also expect this project to extend into 2016. So I think what you'll see is, in parallel, new APIs will light up. So the OneDrive API, et cetera, they'll light up under this model. The unified API will light up under this model as time goes on. And also we'll be bringing on the capability for you to register your own API, your own scopes, and then expose that so that we can have calling between not just calling of first party APIs, but also calling of other developers' APIs.
Okay, cool. And then, so one of the things too that you talked about in your in the blog post last week that I thought was really interesting was about this new V2 app model that we have. So today we have what we call the V1, where people go to the Azure management portal and manage the windowsazure.com. They create an app. They also define the permissions when they create the app. And then as a developer, when I want to authenticate, when I create the app and then I specify the different applications and the permissions, or we call those scopes, that I want to be able to have the application have the ability to read someone's email. So that user, when they go to use my app, the first time they go to authenticate, Azure says, hey, you haven't given this app permission to do the things that the app needs. So you go through something called the common consent, to where I get this list of, hey, the app wants to do ABCD. Do you grant a permission to do that stuff? One of the things that you guys talked about in the blog post was that in this new model, the concept of defining permissions up front is no longer there. That instead, as a developer, I can then specify when I request an access token or go to authenticate, I can specify the permission the application needs, so that it's instead of a all or nothing kind of a thing and then having to later do like an on the fly request. Now it's essentially everything is on the fly in the V2 model. And so my app can, whenever someone logs in, if when they go to log in or they go to do like say a new thing in my application that needs elevated permissions, they're going to be prompted by Azure to say, oh, now this part, you need to grant it these permissions and these permissions, so that people could use maybe a subset of my app and then maybe the more elevated stuff that maybe is says, you know, I can send email on your behalf. It's like, yeah, I like your app, but I don't want to let you send email on my behalf too. That's coming too, you're saying?
Yes, it's baked into the V2 model. We call it dynamic consent. The act of the user saying, yes, you can read my email is consent. And then dynamic meaning that the app now can specify at runtime, okay, this is what I would like right now, and then it can incrementally ask for more as appropriate. So it's baked into the model now, and you can use it when you're doing something like calling the Outlook API, so that you can actually the scopes for Outlook are specified, and you can ask, at the beginning, oh, I would like to be able to read your calendar, but that's it. And then later, well, I'd actually like to be able to write to your calendar as well. And the app can incrementally ask for that. And we will make that. It's baked into the model so that when third-party APIs, when your APIs can be lit up, then you will be able to do the same thing, specify a range of scopes for your API, and then someone who's calling it can ask for incrementally more as necessary, ask for incrementally more permissions in their application. And Azure AD, or well, the system, the new combined system will be able to let the user incrementally say yes to those things or incrementally say no to those things as the case may be.
Yeah, it's nice. It's nice because as a user, you see a big long, you know, sometimes you go sign into an app with one of these identities and then you see, you know, an absolute metric something load of permission demands and you're like, well, maybe I'm not so sure. So I'll hit cancel as opposed to just starting small and then slowly asking for more over time.
So when you do this, when someone gets prompted for these permissions, is it work the similar kind of way with the common consent today where even if I ask for one of these more elevated permissions down the road, Azure AD is going to remember that. So the next time the user goes in, they're not going to be, if I'm getting this new permission, this permission again, if I've already consented to it at some point in the past, it's not going to ask me a second time.
The system remembers, so you don't have to prompt again. I don't know where we landed, though, that so we have a set of people here who think very deeply about that this particular aspect of the user experience, and should we remind the user that they previously said this application could do these things, or should we just not? No, don't worry about that. Just ask them for the new thing. I'm not sure where we landed on that in this whole incremental model, but certainly, you know, we'll think about doing the right thing for the user so that they're making the best possible informed decision. With at the same time, without bombarding them with information to make it difficult, like cognitive overload, difficult to make the decision because oh my gosh, there's so much on the screen here. So, you know, there's a lot of different clever user interface things that we can do there, like maybe, you know, showing a little expando drop down where if you touch it and expand it, you can see what you might have permitted in the past, and then making most of the focus be this is what the application wants to do that's new. But the system remembers, so we can allow those various different UIs to happen. It's just a matter of the choices that we make around it.
I think this will help with a common problem that I see with developers in the 365 space that are using like the unified API or what have you, is they register an app, they say, I want to do, you know, like read a calendar or something. And then later on down the line, they change their app and they want to do something like send mail or read files. And to do that right now, you've got to go into Azure AD and you add the additional scopes, but then you have to have that user go unregister and re-register, I think, or sure, I'm using the right terminology there, but go through that flow again to grant that app permissions again. There's no sort of way to incrementally do that down the track. At least that's what my understanding of it and what I see developers struggling with. So I could see this being quite a nice addition for those folks who, you know, add some functionality to their app and go, oh, actually now we do need the ability to go send mail. So I'll just go and ask for that additional permission instead of having to go put the user through the whole rigmarole of re-authenticating or reauthorizing with that app.
You're right. It is a limitation of the system today. And it does present developers with difficult choices they have to make in their design, because often, you know, if you think you're an ordinary user, you're using an application, I think the scenario you mentioned there is spot on. Like, maybe I want this thing to be able to read my calendar, and that's fine. And reading my calendar is, I'm okay with people with this thing reading my calendar. But a lot of very interesting innovation can happen in applications when they can do things like read your email and interpret data that's coming in and help you out with things as they're reading your email. But allowing a robot to read your email is a big deal. Yeah. And maybe you don't trust the application to that level yet. You want to get to know it for a while. And it can do show you what it can do by being able to read your calendar and do that. But it's a big step to let something read your email or send email as you. So having these incremental mechanisms, I think, is absolutely important to be able to build the kinds of applications people want to build today.
Yeah, you know, I sign into these apps and I just want to kick the tires with the basic functionality first before I give it the keys to the kingdom, right? So it's nice to be able to step that up as you get more and more comfy with an app.
Yeah, it'd be cool to have I can see like an interface where if you had a lot of permissions that the app needed, having almost like a little dashboard, a little settings page where you can go in and say, here's all the things that I can need. And you can either check stuff off and hit a request, and it would kind of force go out to do that one kind of request or that one dynamic consent to where someone could do an all or nothing at one time, or they could do like an a la carte, just kind of pre-authorized stuff. And if not, then just, you know, as your app kind of needs these permissions, it prompts them at that time. So let me, we covered a lot of stuff here, and I know you got a ton of stuff that's already been done, a lot more work that's going to be going on here, Stuart. So let me ask you, where can people go to get like some more information about this or ask any questions or kind of follow along with as updates are being made and being published for both from the consumer side, but also for developers to be able to start taking advantage of this stuff? Where were the best places you would point them to go get that information?
So the main jump off point is the Azure Active Directory Developer Guide, and that's at aka.ms/AADDev. AADDEV. And inside that, that's the main developer guide for Azure Active Directory. It has all of the V1 app model stuff is prominent on those on that page. And in the how-to section, there's a link to the preview of how to sign users in for Microsoft account and Azure AD at the same time. If you click that link, it takes you through to the developer guide for the V2 app model. And when, as we make changes, as we add more samples, as we add more capability, well, you'll find that all on that page that's inside that preview link. And also there's instructions there on where to get help if or where to send feedback. So we use user voice for getting feature feedback. And we monitor Stack Overflow for developer questions. And the tag on Stack Overflow is Azure-Active-Directory. And we monitor that constantly to see where people are having trouble to help them out. So that's the main place to watch. And of course, when we make big announcements, we make those big announcements on the Active Directory team blog. And you can find that by going to your favorite search engine and just type Active Directory team blog. It's always the top hit. And that's where you can find out where everything's going on in the identity space for Microsoft, basically.
Very cool. Yeah, well, thanks very much for your time. It's been a really interesting discussion, and I learned a lot. I hope our listeners have as well. And so thanks very much for coming on.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you. This has been, as a developer, this is an exciting place to be. The more and more you kind of dive into Azure AD and the APIs that you guys offer are, it's very cool. It's very cool to see the updates you guys are making. And so it's cool progress.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks for coming on, Stuart. Really appreciate your time.
If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as a WAV or an MP3 file and provide a link so that we can play your question on the show. Our theme music is an excerpt from Evaporated Eric by Monk Turner, used under Creative Commons. You can subscribe to us in iTunes by searching for the Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find a full transcript and show notes of each episode. You can find us on Facebook searching for the Microsoft Cloud Show or on Twitter at MS Cloud Show. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.